Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. This is Veronica Entwistle. I'm an intuitive and energy counselor, and I'm always seeking new ways of how we can push through that kind of container that happens in human consciousness. And we have a wonderful pusher through her today. Curry, like the spice, Glacel, right? And Curry is a person who came from the Silver Spoon reality, or kind of.
Definitely the reality.
Well, it's really wonderful to talk with you because so many people think that because somebody was born a certain way or had this or that, their financial world has shrunk before they even get out there in the working world. And you're somebody who went down and then you've put yourself back up pretty swiftly, and you're taking a whole lot of us with you. So, Curry
right.
Glacel, I want to know what happened in your history, and tell us a little bit about how you're using access consciousness, but you're being very diligent
yes.
about it. So
yes.
you want to
yes.
tell us a bit about your dive and your rise?
Yes, and let's so I have just written a book. It's taken me 3 or 4 or 5 years to actually write it, and it's been so cathartic that then I had to rewrite and rewrite it. So I won't bore you with the long melodrama of my ups and downs, but let's talk about.
But wait,
what
when
really
you're manifesting, do you still have melodrama?
If I'm what?
If you're manifesting so well, do you still have melodrama?
Manifesting. One of the definitions is how it shows up. So really, I'm creating and generating, and I'm continually asking myself questions. And I would say today, you caught me on a day where I've been asking the question, what am I unwilling to do that if I did it would create more money than I knew what to do with?
Whoa.
So do you want to know what that is for me?
You bet.
So what that is for me is technical shit. I cannot stand dealing with a computer or emails, and I go on my emails and it's so boring, and it's like I get 150 a day and I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to find what people are saying? And so I have had to look at that because that was the number one thing that came up for me, that if I was willing to change that fixed point of view, that is a fixed point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And from my
That's
life,
interesting, a fixed point of view. I'm going to think about that. So keep
yes,
going.
Don't like computers. That is a fixed point of view. Mm-hmm. I hate emails. That is not only a fixed point of view, it also happens to be a judgment. So fixed points of view and judgment stop your money flows. Well, they stop all the flows in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot make money with fixed points of view about money.
Hmm.
So one of the things, one of the major things we start with in my beginning money classes, they're called Right Riches for You, Fundamentals of Wealth, is we begin to look at what fixed points of view do you have about money?
Hmm.
What does money actually mean to you? We start really basic, and you cannot believe how many points of view people have about that one little question.
Mm-hmm.
What does money mean to you?
Well, I guess I have to say it means anxiety. It often means a divisiveness between people. So that's fixed point of view, is it not?
Yeah, and that's really positive, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's really,
really strong.
That's really joyful, but you just can't wait to get in there.
And actually, that anxiety, I noticed, shared with a lot of people. Say
yeah.
money, say banks, whatever, and people
yep.
go, irk.
Yeah, and how many people right now are saying good things about the economy?
Nah, not many. Mm-mm.
Yeah, lots of people are happy with everything or totally freaking out or worried or whatever. Mostly whatever. I mean, at least in Texas here, we're just, you know, we're I live in a Democratic city surrounded by a Republican state.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Now, that's really interesting because you're talking about a fixed approach. And our prejudices, which come through whichever kind of political party we're mm-hmm. in, are a fixed
either
reality.
Way.
Yeah.
Yep. Either way, they're a fixed reality.
Mm-hmm.
This is, if your listeners get anything out of this, one of the most expansive things for them to get and to hear and to become aware of is that their fixed point of view stopped them from creating
mm-hmm.
all the money they would like to have.
Hmm.
Of course, it goes without saying that fixed point of view stop the creation of a great relationship. They stop the creation of a great life, a great, you know, whatever you like to do in life. fixed points of view are what are between you and creating a greater financial reality.
And it's like, I'm too old now, or I haven't got a good hairdo, or my breasts have sagged and nobody's going to like me, and blah, blah, blah. We can have fun listing all those ones we've got.
And that's where I start. One of the things I do is I get my clients, class participants, to start making lists of all their fixed point of view. Where have they stopped themselves that they're aware of? Mm-hmm. And then hopefully after 3.5 days, we get to uncover some of the unaware, unconscious ones as well. So it's incredibly, what do I say? Not just expansive. It's life changing to do an Access Money class with me. It's life changing.
I just want to remind people that one of the things that you have, there's a radiance that we put out. And if your radiance is full of fixed points of view, you know what I'm saying? So you
tell me what you mean by that, because I have a feeling that you deal in that realm more than I do.
Oh, okay. My feeling is, as I watch you speak about it, and as an intuitive, of course, and and knowing how you were raised a certain way, but you're so not earnest. What is the word? You're so kind of real about seeing your fixed points of view, and that shifts your frequency and how you radiate into the world and how the world comes back and visualizes itself back to you. Not visualizes, but, you know, manifests itself. And I can watch it in you. You've got a wonderful light, and I know that you created that in a lot
of
ways. You unlocked it.
I did. I absolutely unlocked it. I absolutely was just stubborn as a bulldog. And I absolutely, when I was 16 years old, I had this awareness that I was living with people that hated me. I was living with people that had a lifestyle that I thought was, I would say, borderline repulsive, the way they acted. For me, it was 100% hypocrisy.
Really?
And I was a righteous little snot too, okay? Because I was being judged and I judged right back.
Wow, yeah.
And I also resisted and reacted.
Now, but wait, that's important too, because where we are judged, we generally judge right back. And again, we're fixed, right?
The judgment then fixes us. Right. Unfortunately, I wish I could say that my judging right back or reacting was a good thing, but in fact, it hindered me. Right. And it took me many, many years to become aware enough to realize that what I resist not only persisted, I'll go one step forward, it actually begot. It was created. So actually it did beget or begot. I did. I was a, I was actually a theology minor.
Oh, really? So. Good for you. Wow. That's great.
Not really. It was really ridiculous. But anyway,
But also theology is another place where you can get a real fixed point of view if you're not careful.
Yeah, think. Look at the terrorism going on. You think the jihadists have a fixed point of view?
Really? Yeah.
That's how they function. From fixed points of view.
Well, actually, when you talk, I often think we have a kind of an inner jihad going on when we're not open for. Yeah.
Well, we are, you know, you and I and a group of people on this planet are saying, hey, we need to ask questions and we need change. What's it going to take to change this? What's it going to take to change this? And the beginning of asking that question is like it opens and eliminates and begins to frazzle and dissipate all the fixed points of view. The question empowers. The answer absolutely is fixed and disempowers anyone all the time.
So what's the question? Can you play with us? Can you do a little sample?
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely.
Everybody pay attention.
First of all, do you know that I use this magic wand, right? You know, in Access, there's a magic wand. I don't know if you want me to play with that.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, that's fun. I love that.
Okay.
I like to have fun. Access is also fun, is it not?
Thank goodness, you know, because life was so serious before I met Gary Douglas, and I met him and Dr. Dane here in 2001. Before I met them, I thought I was going to die of seriosity. I'm not even sure that's a word, but everything was
it
so
ought to be.
Serious. You know, I had like a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old, and I was a single mom, and I've been struggling. I don't think I'd had like a full night's sleep in like 4 years. Wow. And I was like, I hate my life. I hate my life. And yet I'm not going to do away with myself for one reason alone, and they're 4 and they're 8 years old. So these little boys were really my reason for living for many, many years. And I will forever be grateful for them. That's a whole nother story. But anyway, so I met Gary and Dane when Sam and Nate were 4 and 8. And the very first minute I met them, I went to dinner with Dane. Someone connected me while they were in Houston. And then I went to meet Gary. And I was immediately outstandingly stopped in my tracks. They were the first two men I'd ever met in my life who were kind through and through and didn't have a hidden agenda. I was like, is this possible? Every other man I'd ever met in my life wanted to use me, abuse me, or use me, and in more ways than one, for my money, for my body, for my, apparently people, some people think I'm attractive. I mean, I don't care what you call
it. You're lovely.
Thank you. I was and have always been, and this has been one of the hardest things for me to be honest about, is that actually people want to use me. I mean, that's really what I'm looked at. I'm somebody people want to use. So that was a fixed point of view that I resisted so much. Here we go. So I had to be willing to be used. Now, if I'm willing to be used and I'm not resisting being used, then who's in control?
Right.
There's your phone ringing.
We're going to turn it off right now.
I was just going to say, I wonder where my phone is. And I too. Thank you. That's great.
Well, so what you're saying, wait a sec. I haven't quite grokked this. That something about your, you're willing.
Strange Land.
Yeah, it's a great, great book.
Great book.
A long time ago, still has impact.
Yep.
But
yep.
I'm going, okay, so if you're willing to be, do we have to accept that we're willing, or do we just recognize that we hold a picture in ourselves saying, being used?
Yes, it's more about recognizing and acknowledging.
Right.
It's not accepting. The thing that I love about these tools is that they really give you an opportunity to look at the root word. So there is a difference between resisting and reacting and agreeing and aligning. That is the basics of polarity, and that's where you start. How do you fit into this reality? Do you side that's right or wrong, good or bad, okay? And then this also ties into the magic wand. So if you can pull yourself out of the polarity of right and wrong, good and bad, resistance and reaction, agreement, alignment, and you can become something less significant like, oh, allowance.
Ah. Is it just a matter of being,
word.
Just feeling being?
Well, I wish it was a matter of just feeling being. But let me tell you, for 15 years, I've been asking, okay, what would it take for me to be an allowance of me?
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's step by step by step. It's really, I love and appreciate and admire these two, you know, Gary Douglas, the founder, and Dane, who's his partner now. Basically, I was at a 7-day in South Africa last week. And again, I've heard Gary say this for 15 years. He said, Access Consciousness, it's the 12-step program to unlocking and becoming more conscious. Only there's 144 steps.
Wow.
and here you want to know the basics. It's really easy, but the problem is people don't want easy. They want hard. They want to work hard for their money. They want to work hard for everything. And it's hard, but not in the traditional way you would think hard. So I would say being honest with yourself.
That's hard sometimes.
Okay, so there. So that's really where the pedal hits the metal. So that's why I say I can use my life as an example. I can't talk about you. I can't talk about others. But I can give you from my last 15 years and beyond what it took to change my mindset about money, my mindset about my reality, and to start creating a life that I enjoyed.
So what you're showing me is that people don't keep us out of it. We keep ourselves out of the money thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. It's our point of view that creates our reality. It really is our point of view that creates our reality.
Yeah, I know. I've said to people, well, I have a Mars in Pisces, and that makes it hard to go forward. That's just another stupid thing.
Well, that's a nice justification. I have Mars in Pisces. Yeah. I think I'm going to use mine. I'm a triple Scorpio. I should be having a lot more sex.
I know. It's ludicrous when you put it up like that. But the trick is, now tell me if this is true, Curry. Is the trick not discovering what it is that you are holding as beliefs?
Well, I wouldn't say that's the trick. I would say that's the work.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the work. There's no trick to it. It's called demand to get more aware of who you are, where you are, when you are, and, you know, where you'd like to go. You have to make a demand of yourself.
Okay.
And then you have to demand to look at the ugly. The ugly is, yeah. And I would say for me, the most horrific, ugly things that I've had the hardest, you know, looking at, after I look at them, they're actually not quite as ugly. It's the secret and the covert part that made them seem grotesque.
Mm-hmm.
When I actually blab them out, either to a facilitator, a friend, or in a class, oh my God, you know, you're like on the hot seat for maybe a minute or two, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, that didn't kill me. Huh. Wow. I'm still alive. You know, I'm still here. Wow. And then you have this amazing facilitator who it happens to be for me and many times, Dane and Gary. And they would sit there and they just have this caring and they're just like, well, what else would you like to choose now?
Hmm.
And I would say that's also because they were my mentors. That's how I present my classes.
Hmm.
I really don't talk to people about what I know. I really like to find out, what do you know?
Hmm.
Because what you know is what's going to take you where you want to go. Ah, that rhymed. I'm a poet, but I don't know it. But my feet show it.
Longfellows, and they smell like Dickens. Right?
So it's really about, what do you know?
Mm-hmm.
What are you denying that you know? What are your fixed point of views that are stopping you from knowing what you know and going where you need to go?
Hmm.
We have a few trillion of them. If we've been around 4 trillion years, if we are indeed infinite beings, now here I would say this is one of the premises. You must look at, are you willing to acknowledge yourself as an infinite being? If that's too difficult for you, then I don't know if my classes are actually going to be so fun for you, because if you think this is it, you're only here once, and when you die, you're buried underground, that's some serious fixed points of view.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not willing to say, wow, maybe I'm not right about everything. You see, people would rather be right than free.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd rather be right than free, then probably my classes are not going to be something you're going to enjoy, because I'm going to be constantly asking you to be willing to be wrong, or to be willing to come out or off that point of view, or I'm going to ask you, what's the value of holding on to that point of view?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, because we started this interview a little bit late. And
did we?
Yeah, and knowing...
What do you mean? Late in 2017 or late in time? What do you mean late?
Just late this morning, but what I'm chuckled at and kind of got horrified at, that's me wanting to go forward in certain ways and somehow resisting, so I trip up over technology, which I blame, right? And that's
yeah,
so it's like a perfect example of going, oh, wait till I tell her this one. She'll know exactly what I'm doing. It's not doing wrong. It's doing in a limiting fashion, isn't it? Keep going. This is so exciting.
If you're choosing to blame an inanimate object for you not having what you'd like in your life, that's kind of an interesting choice.
I know. It's kind of silly, isn't it? But we don't often get our heads out of it. Hmm?
Well, are you making technology greater than you?
Yeah, probably. It's like a vehicle.
Yeah,
I don't drive that well sometimes. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, would an infinite being truly choose that?
No.
There's another question. You had the no right away. So one of the basic questions I'll present is, would an infinite being truly choose this? And if not, why are you? What is the value of this choice?
Mm-hmm.
What is the value of this fixed point of view? You know, I like to tell people that they could be just one point of view, one fixed point of view away from a totally new, different financial reality.
Hmm. Wow. So how long did it take you to begin to feel the financial, grounding, the financial freedom after you met Dane and Gary?
So freedom, kind of an elusive word for me. So because I was raised by a billionaire, literally, mm-hmm. in a billionaire's household, I never actually had the thought that I needed anything. I grew up with an absence of need in the area of shelter, the basics. I had absolutely
clothing,
shelter, clothes, you know, a house, school, allowance. I absolutely never experienced that point of view. Now, I did, however, experience quite a few points of view from my, gosh, I'm not sure there's really any nice way to describe my stepmother, except maybe the best is, have you seen Cate Blanchett in the new Cinderella?
No, I have not, but I do love her acting. Yeah.
Yeah. So she was kind of like that. Only my father was not this nice, wonderful guy that died. My father was also like this really angry, unkind, money-oriented, keeping up with the Joneses type of guy, which is really weird because he was like a multi, almost billionaire when he was 21, right? Mm-hmm. His father, my grandfather, made all the money.
Oh, I
see. He was an oil catter, and he basically gave it to his son. Never do that with your children. They become real assholes if you do that. I'm just telling you. They become entitled and insecure. What a really bad combo, you know? You have all this money, and you're always trying to make other people feel bad because you don't feel good.
Right.
Okay.
That's an interesting equation, because that's what we all do, whether you're rich, poor, or in between, right?
Oh, well, yes. People do that. When they don't feel secure, they put other people down to make them feel better. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how rich you are. It just gets really, that's what I grew up around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you had siblings? Did they react that way too?
No. Yes and no. I didn't have real siblings. My mother somehow, I don't know how my mother and father really got it together, except maybe I was hovering over them. They met at a party in New York, dated for like 6-8 months, married for like 9 months or a year, had me, and boom, we're in a divorce. So it was a really wham-bam kind of thing between my mother and my father. Now, when I was 6 years old, my father decided to marry my stepmother, and the beginning of the worst childhood you could ever imagine began. Hmm. So in my household, having money was so minuscule to being oppressed and abused emotionally, physically, and verbally that I wouldn't encourage anybody to change lives with me. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, thanks to Access, I was able to look at all my past and go, do I desire to live a life of being a product of my past, or do I desire to completely destroy my past? And it's more than forgiving those assholes. It's like, wow, interesting point of view. And where do I take responsibility? So somehow I decided to come to this reality.
Hmm.
I still don't totally get why I would ever choose them as parents or family. But I did. So I did. So I can't keep trying to understand something that's not understandable. They were a lot meaner than you ever could imagine. And that is the past. You know, thank God they're all almost dead. So how does it get any better than that? So I did what I did. I did what I did, you know. Mm-hmm. And now what can I do and where can I go?
Right on.
And so that's where I've been living for, I guess, since I was divorced from my ex-husband when my youngest son was 2 months old, I think.
Oh, wow. Tiny wee.
Yeah. Yeah. And he just turned 20 this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So you're asking me how long it took. Well, first of all, I would say it's taken me 20 years for me to even go, wow. Okay. So would I actually like to have another relationship, to even ask the question? Because there was so much between my abusive family and having having a marriage that didn't turn out the way my utopian ideal or ideal scenario thought it would. It was a lot of disappointments for me. So I have had to spend a great deal of the past 15, 20 years letting the past go and living in the present. Thank God for the Access tools, 10-second increments, working on being present every day, and creating a future.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe I could have done it without the access tools. I totally believe they saved my life. They gave me something which was to work with. And I don't need to have a teacher. I don't need to have a priest. I don't need to have a guru. I can work on these tools every 10 seconds of my life, and I can change my life for the better every day with or without any other person.
But you have to stay on top of it. You got to, what you're saying is you...
No, I have to choose every day.
Okay, choose. That's better.
That I'm going to create and not destroy.
I see.
And if I find myself destroying, I do the fastest I can to go, ah, okay, not the choice I'd like. Okay, what can I do next choice? And I have tools to deal with my, as you call it, monkey mind, to deal with my limiting thoughts, feelings, and emotions, and to pull myself out of them and back on track with creation and the future and possibilities and questions and creation and the future and possibilities and questions and creation and the future and possibilities and questions.
Oh, wow. So what are your future? Okay, wait a sec. I want to talk about several things. One is you're going to be on a world tour.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I leave Houston on February 17th.
Woohoo! And you do online classes. I'm just going to do a little circuit here. You do online classes. You're also an editor of, an investor. And
I'm not an editor.
You're not a techie wizard. We're clear about that so far.
Yeah, so far, I'm learning. Every day I try and learn one thing.
So, but you've got some films, and one of the ones I was really excited about.
I've produced two films. That's true.
Oh, I love that. Do you love producing?
I did love it.
Yes.
I did love it. You have to have lots of money to do that. I mean, lots. I mean, the 6-minute film I produced cost $75,000, and I convinced the director to basically volunteer his photo time and his edit time. I just paid for all his travels because he believed in the project, the immigration project. So
called legal,
illegal movie.org. I am, you know, I just actually sent out as many as I could. I pushed about 100 buttons and then I got, you know, like, oh my God. So I just sent it out to about 100 people and I said, please share, because it's really relevant right now. It's a great film and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. I had help from the amazing Deanna Espedia, who gathered a team of lawyers and people who are familiar with the South American situation here in Texas. And we stayed in Texas and worked within the Texas court systems and the Texas school systems. And she was great. And we had advisors and it turned the project. She volunteered all her time too. And we had these kids. It was an amazing project. It cost $75 hard cold cash. If the people had not volunteered, it probably would have cost $200,000-$300,000.
So you're saying with your tools, you were able to manifest this wonderful piece of informative information for people. I mean, your tools are really helping you go forward.
Well, okay. So let's talk about this. So basically my tools, in what way do you mean my tools?
I mean that if it's very expensive, we're talking about you teaching us about manifesting wealth, but you had the money, you drew in the resources, whether or not you had to pay for them all, you did it, right?
Okay, so I want to go back to manifesting.
Okay.
So
you're saying choosing, right?
It's really about changing your energy and changing your receiving.
Okay.
What are you unwilling to receive is what is stopping you from creating money, wealth. And also, there's so many different like attitudes and point of views that I now have. Like for me, wealth and riches and creating a lot of them is for one reason alone. One reason: change people's realities. Okay. That is my basic premise for creation of more wealth. That is where I'm going. That is my path.
Okay.
Now, being willing to enjoy wealth, being willing to love the antiques, the home. I love my home. It's, you know, I've spent 6 years remodeling it and decorating it and creating it as this amazing, beautiful healing space. As a matter of fact, I was just thinking today of maybe opening up my home to 1-day and 2-day clients to come and spend the day with me and see what it's like to really breathe money, become money. It's sort of contagious. I don't know really how to explain it. I've had a couple of friends of mine give me testimonies, and I think one of the things that's different about me is that I actually love money and like money.
Okay. This is good to hear, yeah. Yeah, because well, a lot of us just resist money, you know that?
Resist. Oh, listen, Gary Douglas and Stephen Bowman have both said, Curry, just keep going, keep going. Only one in 10,000 people you'll meet actually like money. People pretend they do. People pretend they want money. But I can tell you by the numbers in my classes, most people resist dealing with their money issues. They think that ignorance is bliss. Let me just say right now, that is probably one of the most dangerous points of views you could ever have. What you don't know will destroy you and your financial life. What you don't know is what will bite you in the butt.
So did you tootle off and take courses on finances?
Oh my gosh, I've taken so many courses. I had to force myself. This is also something that I thought I was too stupid actually to learn about math and science and accounting and all that. That was part of the abuse, the financial abuse that I received as a kid. But that's a whole nother story. I don't want to go into that. But I grew up thinking I was actually not very smart, not very pretty, and basically incompetent and needed to marry a rich man. And hopefully never talk to my father again because they just wanted to get rid of me. I mean, I was aware of that point of view my whole life.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was the basic point of view in my household. The second thing was nobody ever talked to me. Like, I literally mean nobody ever talked to me. I had my first real conversation with an adult in school.
Wow. So how was your command of language? It must have been a bit restricted.
My command of language was fine. My capacity to engage with people was absolutely stunted. I went to the best schools. My best subject was Latin. Can you believe it? I studied Latin for 2-3 years and got straight A's.
Were you Catholic?
No. I was raised Catholic light, which is called Episcopalian.
Okay. Catholic light. So, I like that.
Yeah. And so very good schooling, but very math science oriented. And what I found out actually not too many years, I mean, in the past 10 years, I have had to admit, have you ever seen the movie Temple Grandin?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm a lot like her.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I did not realize that I was pretty much a functioning autistic.
Wow, that's interesting.
I can be really, really, really brilliant. And I can be really like, what? Like really totally not get where people are coming from. I talk about myself when it comes up in class, when it's productive for people, if it helps people. I mean, one of the things that I've done that just recently I had two girlfriends say, I can't believe you did this. You have to tell people. I have basically gotten out of $1.8 million debt 2 times in my life.
Wow. How do you do that, girl? We want to know.
Well, come to my class.
I will. The thing about you, I want to say, going back to the spectrum and all that we talked about, the Temple Grandin comparison, wonderful vibrance.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I don't think of people that way like that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, not a walking autistic, functioning autistic. Yeah. She was a non-functioning autistic.
Right. Because of
her mother and the school and this amazing teacher, she was able to, I'm not that far, but there are bits and pieces, you know, that I just cried through that whole movie and I went, oh my God, I'm so weird and I'm just like her in so many ways. But it does make relationships a little challenging unless people are willing to have allowance for you and they know a little bit about how you function and they are just, you know, easygoing. You know, I'm brilliant and I'm a workaholic and I am very hard on myself, and I push myself, and I push myself, and I force myself to do things. You know, I'm 59 years old, and I've started 2 businesses.
Wow.
I have 2 coaches. I'm learning about online trading. I'm learning about how to sell on Amazon. And finally, after 6-7 years, my access business is beginning to take off. I have people coming on board to work with me that are brilliant. And it's, wow, you know, it's been a long frickin' time, and things are finally starting to come together. And I hate to say the 6-0 word, you know, it's like, OMG, you know, I'm sure glad I didn't know when I was 20 that it was going to be, my life wasn't going to be fun until I was 60. I probably would have killed myself, you know?
Yeah, but you know, the whole thing is like you've really climbed up some very beautiful spiral staircases for the sake of teaching us, a lot of us, you know?
And I have climbed up some fucking evil ass mountain zombie lands too, let me tell you.
Bet you.
I mean, have you seen the movie What Dreams May Come?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a marvelous, marvelous movie.
It's a marvelous movie, and yet is it not difficult, some of the areas that he goes to and the areas she goes to? And this is the work of consciousness. Mm-hmm. You must be willing to look at your ugly. That's what I love about the Access Mantra. All of life comes to me with ease, joy, and glory. When I was in the courts, whether it was with my ex-husband and my child custody issues and battles, whether it was with my, how do I say this? With the will contest, the, you know, the will, the denial of the current will that came out, which was many years, and the ensuing lawsuits with my stepfamily. I had a little book and I wrote down all the time, all of life comes to me with ease, joy, and glory. How does it get any better than this? When I didn't know what to say or be or do, I wrote this down.
Wow.
And that mantra pulled me through. That mantra, having my bars run, being able to go to an access class, being able to say, hey, think I'm falling apart here. And they would go, are you falling apart or are you falling together? Right?
Yeah. So dissembling what you know, maybe, huh?
Yeah, when you disassemble what you know and what you've counted on, it's like, walking on water is the first step. Walking on quicksand is the second step, and walking on air is the third step. So it's a little bit, you know, thank goodness we can do it in steps and 10-second increments. And if you just are interested in changing one point of view, I would say, you know, try an access class. Try a Right Riches class if it's about money for you. We will keep it pointed towards money for you. I always seem to bring it back to money, but money goes into every area of our life. You know, I had a couple one time in my classes that they said after taking my class, not only were they able to talk about money with each other in a more intimate way, but they started having better sex.
Yeah, I can see that. I was just thinking back, not exactly the same, but you talking about relationship difficulty. And I thought, boy, oh boy, the more we actually choose to know ourselves and choose our opinions or whatever, we should be able to have a relate. We should be able to attract in.
Well,
more rounded version.
And be able to sustain a relationship that doesn't consume you or divorce, that you don't have to divorce yourself.
Right.
See, I did not desire to be in a relationship where I divorced myself ever again. I did that my whole life with my family. Mm-hmm. I always tried to bend, fold, and staple myself to be liked by them.
Staple.
Yeah, right? And it never worked. They were never going to like me anyway, but I kept believing a lie that if I changed, it would be possible.
Mm-hmm.
So when I finally got clear that that was not possible, then I went, oh crap. Okay. So I need to have my own back. I need to get clear and acknowledge who I am, what I am, where I am, when I am, and where would I like to go? And it seems self-centered, but it's not really. It's now I know pretty much, I would say over 50%, I'm clear of who I am, where I'm going, and what I'd really like to have in my life. I still ask, and I'm at least open, and I'm willing to invite people, you know, into my journey and into my life, and I'm willing to engage with them, and I'm very different than I was 20 years ago.
And you're always making the choice, so you're not a fixed picture.
Oh my gosh. And I do my best to look at every fixed point of view I have, particularly about money, particularly about relationship, particularly about family, particularly about every area in my life. And I destroy and uncreate it. And I ask, what else is possible? What point of view is going to work for me better?
Mm-hmm.
What point of view is going to really create the life I'd like to live? You know?
Jumping around a little bit, because that's part of what we are as human beings. And Richard's, that was
or
one
infinite beings.
Or infinite beings. Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
The
okay.
piece, I mean, that you did on Ann Richards, that
oh,
is
that was a documentary. That was a full on documentary.
I haven't seen the whole thing. I've only seen the trailer, and I just I lifted and lifted. Do you want to tell people just a little recap of that? Because that's worth, that's very inspiring.
Well,
you know?
if you like women,
mm-hmm.
or if you are a woman, or if you are the daughter of a woman, or if you are the son of a woman, you might find it interesting. It is a beautiful story. Never before had a documentary been on Ann Richards. She was an amazing woman who came from a very humble background in was it Waco, Texas, West Texas. And she ended up becoming governor of the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very potent, powerful position. And she was a Democratic governor. And she was amazing. She was a forward thinker. She was a mover and a groover. And so many years ago, I was approached by these two young men, very young, let me emphasize young, directors, and I ended up collaborating with them, and I ended up putting in way more money than I wanted to, particularly when it came to crossing the T's and dotting the I's. I had to hire three lawyers to do everything that they didn't really do.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up putting in probably three times more money. I thought I'd start with a $100,000 investment, but I ended up putting in three times more money than I wanted to, more than anybody else ever did. And therefore I got a lot more control. And thankfully I was able to hire the right lawyers. I was able to engage HBO.
So what happened when you got the HBO? Was it a success? Did you get a lot of people watching?
Well, having HBO on board completely changed everything, and it turned the whole adventure of creating a documentary and creating an inspirational film into something that would be actually historically documented and be available for anyone to find. That is, of course, that they've heard of HBO, I guess.
Well, what's really interesting to me is that you are so profound about helping people empower themselves. And that's Ann Richards' whole MO. And
yeah.
I really, really admired. I listened to her address to the Democratic Convention in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And I wept, because it's about... Mm. today having elongated or made even worse what was going on. But here you are doing your personal access work and helping us absolutely empower ourselves. And this is perfect timing for all of this. We need it. We need the Women's March. We need you.
We do. We do. We, you know, I wish that I was a really big public figure, and I wish I had her smarts, and I wish I had her cute little phrases and her just incredible willingness to just say what was, you know,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time, with facilitating the classes I do, one person is really important to me. When one person has their lights go on and they get how valuable they are to the continuance and the sustainability of our planet, when they get that everything they do is connected to everything everyone else does, then I have created one other step towards a more conscious planet and a more conscious reality and a more conscious future for our children. And that's what I can do. You know, like I said, I wish everyone could see that documentary. It's called All About Ann, Governor of the Lone Star State. I would just so recommend it, you know, and maybe perhaps in the near future, I'll find a way to get it into all the high schools and, you know, all the girls' schools and, you know, lots of places. Who knows what is still possible?
Well, maybe some of the listeners will carry that little baton as well.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
You're a sparky part of a wave that's going on. A little curry, we all need it, right? So if you could tell people how to get hold of you and tell them just 2 seconds about your European trip or your London, Denver, India.
Right.
Is that Europe or is that global?
It's global. It's global. And it is London, strangely enough, Denver, stranger even enough, India, and then actually Dubai. So we put a few more classes in there.
Wonderful.
Well, the easiest way to find me is curryglassell.com. So I'm hoping they can look at your blog or your podcast and figure out how to spell my name. It's not too difficult, but you got to have 2 R's for curry, like the spice, and 2 S's and 2 L's for Glassell, like live well, be well. So if they go to my website, they can find anything about me. Also, Access Consciousness website, and I have classes. I have a telecall actually coming up on the 14th of February.
Great.
So it's called Sex and Money, you know.
Nice. What's perfect
that,
for Valentine's,
what's that all
right?
About? Yeah. What's that all about? Are they congruent? And if not in your world, would you like them to be? So that's coming up. I have another couple of telecalls, but really the best way to look me up is go to my website. It's easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Curry, thank you so much for sharing with us and for being on the planet right now. And thanks, everyone, for listening. This is Veronica Entwistle. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and we're talking to one today, and maybe you're one, too. So veronicaentwistle.com. Thank you.